You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for tuning in to the newest episode of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soker. This episode is being released on March 13th, 2025. And this week we're talking about the decline of kitchens in church buildings throughout the country. This used to be a controversial topic among brethren in previous generations, but now it seems like it's becoming less common in the current generation. I saw an article recently shared on Facebook that discussed this, and I thought it was interesting, and I wanted to talk about some points from it here today. For links to the story we're talking about and some other related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/03-13-25. Now for our story this week. Church kitchens are getting chopped. From Christianity Today, church kitchens are disappearing. They are disappearing from rural, suburban, and urban churches, from liberal and conservative churches, contemporary and liturgical, mega churches, and the medium-sized. One by one across America, as buildings are remodeled and new construction replaces old, kitchens are getting scrapped. The article goes on and says, newly built or remodeled churches typically have a space with a sink and a coffee pot, possibly a microwave, but no expansive countertops suitable for chopping carrots, potatoes, and onions to go into a big pot of soup. No oversized refrigerators for Jell-O salads. No industrial ovens large enough to cook three or four casseroles at once. Churches these days don't have a lot of cupboards with drawers labeled forks and knives, spoons, and serving utensils. That kind of space is gone. Or at least it's going away. Now, it's important to notice the reason why the church kitchens are going away. And it has nothing to do with Bible authority. What the church is authorized to do has nothing to do with that. As I mentioned at the beginning, this was a major source of controversy among brethren in the mid-20th century. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode. But the question about authority, at least in that article, is not even being asked, even though it needs to be. Anytime we want to change what the church is doing, or start some practice that we haven't done before, or even stop something that we are currently doing, we need to consider Bible authority regarding the work of the church. Because if something is authorized, we don't need to stop doing it because of some change in the culture or some differences that we find in the religious world because of some trend that's happening. But then if something is not authorized, well, we should have never started it in the first place. But if we are doing it, we need to stop now, no matter what other churches may be doing. But why are church kitchens going away? Well, here's another quote from that article. Culture has changed, says Katie Eberth, an architect with Aspen Group, a leading firm in the field of church design. It's not part of the culture now. The church culture, where you have 20 women who come together and make a meal. Today we order Panera or Jimmy John's. Hospitality comes up a lot, according to Eberth. But when people talk about what that should look like in the physical construction of a building, they don't talk about fellowship halls with long folding tables where everyone can sit together. They talk about a cafe serving coffee and pastries in the foyer. So one of the things she said was that culture has changed. A fellowship meal hosted in the space where the church assembles takes a huge investment in time, space, expense, volunteers, and so on. And it can be hard to get people to commit to that. Now, people want something that is quick, convenient, and flexible. Why? One reason might be that the social setting that's associated with the church kitchens, the large crowd, the big event, the artificial expectation of a close-knit community that's just not the same as what it was 50 years ago, that's just not what people are looking for anymore. But another reason is probably that people are just busy. And one of the reasons why families are much busier now than they were 50 years ago has to do with women working outside of the home. And before you get upset at me for saying that, listen to this quote from the article. Historian Gretchen Buglin said this part of congregational life has changed dramatically over the last 50 years, driven by larger cultural and economic transformation in America. In 1970, about a third of married women with children under 18 had jobs outside the home. By 1980, that had increased to 51%. By the 2010s, more than 70% of mothers were part of the U.S. labor force. Churches don't have people to run a kitchen, Buglin told CT. You have to have at least a half dozen people who can show up and cook. So churches don't have kitchens because they don't have the people to come in and cook and to work in the kitchens, which is because, as that historian said, most women are out working. Young women with young children, well, they have to drop their kids off at daycare. And by the time they get done with work and pick up their kids, they have to try to make up for that time that they lost while they were working. Young women with no children, well, they've been told they need to get their career established and to make something of themselves in the world. And now older women with grown children, well, they're still working because they were the generation of young women who got pushed into the workforce, and now they can't imagine going back, or they don't know how. Now, the New Testament clearly talks about the woman's role as being that of a homemaker. Titus 2, beginning in verse 3, it says, "Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips or enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored." She is to be a worker at home because that is her primary responsibility. Now, can she also have a job outside of the home? Maybe, but she cannot neglect this primary responsibility. And by making it the norm that she would have a full-time job outside of the home, we've ended up placing an unrealistic expectation on her, and that is not fair. Now, when Paul wrote to Timothy, he wrote about the church and how they were to provide ongoing support for those who were widows indeed, for those who were older widows. But in that passage in 1 Timothy 5, he explained why younger widows were not to be provided for in the same way. He said, "But refuse to put younger widows on the list, for when they feel sensual desires in disregard to Christ, they want to get married, thus incurring condemnation, because they have set aside their previous pledge. At the same time, they also learn to be idle, and they go around from house to house, and not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. Therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach." He talked there about idleness and how idleness leads to sin, because the more time we have on our hands, the more we can get into trouble. Well, what is one way to cure idleness, at least for these women who were younger and widows? What was a cure for that? To get married, bear children, and keep house. She has plenty to do when she takes care of those responsibilities. Now, when we talk about whether or not women should work outside the home or whether that is wise or not, some are quick to point out the virtuous woman of Proverbs chapter 31. They'll say, well, look at her. She worked outside the home. She had a career, so women can do that today. Read Proverbs 31 again. We won't take the time to do that here, but read Proverbs 31 and look at the description of that woman. The virtuous woman, the excellent wife of that chapter, did not have a career. She did not have a job outside of the home. She was active. She was industrious. She even provided income for her family. But she did not have a secular job like so many wives and mothers, even in the church, have today. All of the things that she does there in Proverbs chapter 31 are the things that my wife, who is a stay-at-home mom, they're things that she can do. The only difference is that the husband of the Proverbs 31 woman was likely wealthier than I am because their household had servants. Mine does not. Now, of course, there may be circumstances in which a woman will need to have a job outside of the home, but that should be the exception, not the rule. Instead, we've made it an expectation. But before we close, back to the issue of Bible authority, I want to talk about this briefly before we have to quit. Do we have authority to put a kitchen in the church building? That's a good question, but that's not where we need to start. We need to back up first and ask, do we have authority for a church building? Well, we know from the New Testament that the church, the local church, gathered, they assembled, and that of necessity means they had to have a place to assemble. And since there is no one type of place that is specified in the New Testament, we can use our judgment to determine where we are going to assemble or the type of place we are going to meet. That could include having a building in which to meet. It doesn't have to mean that, but it can include that. Well, if we are to have a building, what is the church authorized to use that building for? Well, it couldn't just be for anything that we want. It would have to be for what the church is authorized to do, what the work of the church is, which is, as we look at the New Testament, the works of evangelism, edification, and benevolence. We don't have time to get into all of those and some passages that talk about them, but I will link to an article in the show notes that does talk about that and shows the passages that talk about what the work of the church is and talks about those three things: evangelism, edification, and limited benevolence. But what about food? Is that included in this? Could that be part of the work of the church? Remember what Paul wrote to the church in Corinth. What? Do you not have houses in which to eat and drink? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you? In this I will not praise you. They had corrupted the Lord's Supper and turned it into a common meal. So in order to fix this, they were to come together to observe the Lord's Supper, and the meals that were the common meals, the meals that were used to satisfy hunger, they were to eat those at home, not when they come together as a church, as verse 17 says. The end of the chapter, he says, if anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, so that you will not come together for judgment. The remaining matters I will arrange when I come. Common meals that we might share together belong in the function of the home, not the church. I recently posted an article that discusses this in more detail than we have time to talk about here, but I will link to that in the show notes. It's called Taking Meals Together. So I encourage you to check that out, because there is a lot of confusion about what is involved in the work of the church and whether that includes social meals like this. But we need to remember that it is good for Christians to be eating together. We probably need to do that more than we already do. But that doesn't mean it is the work of the church. So in summary, it is good when an unauthorized practice goes away from what a church is doing. But if the reason it went away is just because the culture has changed and not because there's a desire to get back to the pattern that's found in the New Testament, then the underlying problem is still there. We need to do all things by the authority of Christ. That includes the work that we do in our local churches and the things that we do in our daily lives. So let's not follow the direction of culture or what the churches around us are doing. Instead, let's try to simply follow the teachings that are found in the Word of God. That's all for this week. Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Hope you found this episode to be interesting and the discussion to be helpful. For links to the story we talked about and some other related materials, some of them I mentioned throughout the episode, you can find those in the show notes at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/03-1325. If you have a moment to rate and review the podcast or share it with others who'd be interested, that is always appreciated. And if you're listening to this, remember that we also upload video versions of the podcast to the Plain Bible Teaching YouTube channel. So if you prefer to watch this on video, that option is there for you. And if you are watching this on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to the channel so you can see the other videos that are posted here from time to time. And if you see a news story or have some topic that you think would make for a good discussion, send that to me at andy@plainbibleteaching.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to talk to you again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching Weekly Newsletter. This free newsletter will be delivered to your inbox each Friday with articles, podcasts, videos, sermon outlines, and more. Visit plainbibleteaching.com to subscribe today.